When Congress created the Veterans Choice Program in 2014, the idea was to eliminate long wait times for veterans trying to get health care. But problems have persisted. From phone system trouble to overcrowded facilities to civilian doctors unwilling to see vets outside of the military structure, veterans have been frustrated by a VA that hasn't met their needs. Are things getting better? The head of Alaska's VA healthcare system joins us to answer that question and more today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. One of the commitments made to those who sign up for military service is the promise of proper medical treatment for service-related injuries, illness, or psychological trauma. But what if you can't get a doctor's appointment for months or at all? Or your service records have gone missing? Who do you turn to? We've got experts on hand today to answer your questions, whether you're a veteran or a family member of a vet. Dr. Timothy Ballard is the director of the VA Health Care System for Alaska and is with us. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for being on hand. Also in the studio is Carrie Epperson. Carrie is the Assistant Service Center Manager for the Seattle Regional Office. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Thanks for being on hand. And also Samuel Hudson is the Alaska VA Health System Information Officer. Hi.
Go Navy.
Oh, it starts right away.
Yes, ma'am.
You also can join our conversation if you have questions about how to access care or how to file for benefits, or if you'd like to share a story or maybe a frustration about your experience in the VA system. You can give us a call, 1-800-478-8255. Statewide, that's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Dr. Ballard, you have been on the job for about a year now. How's it going?
It's been going surprisingly well. I'll tell you, I just retired from the Air Force last year. And the only job that I wanted in the VA was to come back to Alaska, and it's been exciting to be here. But I tell you, the culture of the VA system is very different, and it's taken me most of this last year just to feel like I have a relative understanding of the complexities of the VA, and we're starting to make some progress, and so that's great to see.
Mm-hmm. About 30 years or so more ago, I went with my Vietnam vet husband to visit my World War II veteran father-in-law at a VA hospital in Toma, Wisconsin. And I have to say, I was shocked at how dismal the conditions were. And it was not what I expected at all. I had this thought that, of course, we would take good care of veterans and they would have great facilities. And as I said, this is decades ago. Give us a little step back view of your understanding of the VA system's history and when sort of problems emerged, or have they always sort of been there?
Very interesting question. I think if you look at our history, particularly from the time of the Vietnam War and afterwards, my personal opinion is that there has been a relative decrease in the overall sentiment of veterans. Veterans came back from the war, were heckled in public, were spit upon walking through airports and the like. And I don't think that the government at that time wanted to acknowledge a loss. And so I can understand at that point in time why there may not have been the same sort of emphasis on the care and the overall well-being of veterans. fast forward to now, I think we've made some dramatic strides. The veteran population is one of the most respected occupations across the country, whether you're active duty military or a veteran. There's a significant congressional emphasis on taking care of veterans. There's a significant public outreach for taking care of veterans. And what I've seen personally in the year that I've been in the job, but over the time of the military and to now, is more and more emphasis on taking care of those who bore the brunt of combat. And so I wish I could say that we took care of veterans better back then, but all we can do is live in the present and act for the future. And so we're making dramatic steps to try to optimize the care and services that veterans get, even in Alaska, as remote as it is.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking today about improving the VA healthcare system, specifically in Alaska, but we're also talking about some of the national issues. Yesterday, VA Secretary David Shulkin wrote an editorial in USA Today responding to critics who fear the VA is moving toward privatization. He said, "We're ramping up internal VA capacity along with private referrals. Critics don't want to lose all that VA has to offer. I don't either, and we won't." He went on to say the best system would integrate VA and private sector care. Are you hearing fears from vets in Alaska about privatization? And what do you think the right mix would look like ultimately in this regard?
Absolutely. I think that particularly with a lot of the programs that are now emphasizing more and more purchase care outside of the VA system, it's natural to have that sort of concern. Also, in our current administration, there's been a lot of emphasis on trying to look at optimizing federal spending. And anytime you see a healthcare system that's the largest in the world, and as bureaucratic as it is, there's always the notion that you want to potentially look at optimizing it or modernizing it. And for some, that's always going to look like potential downsizing. I think our situation in Alaska is very different in that we don't have an established hospital on our property. We share our inpatient services with Jay Bear over at the 673rd Medical Group. And so our primary focus has always been primary care and mental health and taking care of the outpatient realm of health care for veterans. And so in my opinion, we're going to still provide that service. We buy a lot of health care in the state and out of the state. And so privatization for us really doesn't look any different. It's still referring a lot of specialty care to the providers in the state that have it. For those things we can't get in the state, we look for partnering with other opportunities, whether it's in the lower 48 or not. So regardless of what happens in the VA throughout the entire country, I think our system is going to look pretty much the same as it has for the past decade or so because of the fact that we just provide the basics of outpatient services and refer out a lot of the rest.
Carrie, and I saw, Sam, you were nodding your head, too, when I asked that question. Carrie, you work at a service center. Tell us first how big the region is that you service, what states, and then what are you hearing in that regard about concerns over privatization?
So we are in the Anchorage Regional Office. It's co-located with the Alaska VA Healthcare Center. We currently have approximately 47 employees, and we serve the entire state of Alaska. So
you're not in Seattle.
I've been in Alaska at the Alaska VA for nearly 15 years.
I'm so sorry. I stand corrected.
No.
I don't know how I had that wrong.
I'm relocating to Seattle in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
So you are correct.
So I'm
currently located in the Anchorage Regional Office where I've been for about 15 years. I'm going to the Seattle Regional Office in about 2 weeks. So. But here locally, we serve the entire state of Alaska. We have nearly 80,000 veterans in Alaska, the largest per capita veteran population. So it's a unique population to serve. Try to do as much outreach as we can to serve those veterans. But what we are hearing in my realm is a lot of veterans don't understand that we have, there's actually three branches of the VA. So Dr. Ballard is with the Health Administration, I am with the Benefits Administration, and then we also have the cemetery. With the Benefits Administration, we have all the other benefits available, such as compensation and education benefits, home loans. And what we're finding in for Alaska veterans is that we have made incredible strides in our processing of veteran claims in Alaska, and we're hearing a lot of positive outcome from those changes that we've made.
I want to drill down in that area a little bit about the differences within the VA, but first I want to give the numbers back out. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide, 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Before we launch into sort of what the different areas are within the VA, Dr. Ballard, in a June story that our military reporter here, Zachariah Hughes, produced, you said that veterans and staff would like to go back to the old way. What does that mean?
What that means is primarily talking about what impact in the state of Alaska the CHOICE program had for our Alaskan veterans. Prior to 2014, with the incident in Phoenix where there were long wait lists associated with delays in veteran care, we provided comprehensive services. When I'm talking about care, we provided the primary care. Our staff coordinated all referrals. We had a partnership with the providers throughout the state in order to coordinate that care. And then we also served on the billing and coordination end. So when a provider in the state saw a veteran, they sent them information directly to us. They billed us, we reimbursed them. And so it was a great partnership throughout the state. Obviously, Alaska is very limited in its healthcare resources. And so our staff had a great understanding of who all the providers were in the state and how to engage with them and how to assure that our veterans had timely care that may not have been available like it was in Phoenix. The implementation of the CHOICE program created an additional layer to the coordination of care. So you have a contractor who comes in this case it's TriWest, who was now in charge of all authorizations for specialty care and all the billing piece. And so there was a lot of confusion both in the veterans part and the providers part as to how the care was coordinated. And there were a lot of problems. We had agents from TriWest telling veterans in Juneau to drive to Sitka for their health care, which is obviously ludicrous. And so there was enough backlash that our Alaskan veterans provided significant feedback to our congressional constituents, who then pushed the VA to change the program for the contractor in TriWest so that our staff took back the referral piece. Our experienced Alaskan VA healthcare staff are the ones now who are coordinating all the care for our veterans. But they still have to work with TriWest, particularly on the billing end, and to get a lot of the information associated with the care coordination. So you still have providers in the state who are billing the VA for what they think is care when they actually should have been billing TriWest and vice versa, because we have different pots of money and we're using different referral sources. And so we've had a number of veterans who have had claims against them because they never paid the bill. Well, the bill should have been paid, but it wasn't sent right in the first place. And so we would just like to go back to the way we did things before, where our staff coordinate from cradle to grave, not figuratively, the care for Alaskan veterans, starting with primary care, coordinating the referrals of specialty care in the state, working with the providers in the state to for their information to get the feedback from the care and to coordinate the reimbursement piece. So there's one single relationship between our veterans, our healthcare providers, and our staff in the state, which would reduce a significant amount of confusion. I've proposed this to our central office. I've proposed it to our congressional offices. I think there's going to be some progress in that direction, but currently, the next iteration of CHOICE hasn't been published or finalized yet, so we're in a wait-and-see mode. But that's what I'm referring to, is I think we really had a great system before 2014, and in trying to fix what we are as a square peg, trying to force us into a round hole of compliance with everyone else in the country and how they're doing business, we sort of become the odd man out, and it was to the detriment of care coordination in the state.
So the one-size-fits-all didn't work really well for Alaska. We are going to go to the phones. Donna is in Tok. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Did you have a question?
Yes, I'm Alaska Native female disabled veteran. I was misdiagnosed 5 years ago in Fairbanks with multiple sclerosis. Well, after a couple of years of daily injections, I did research online and found out that Alabama leads the nation. So I went down to Birmingham. I walked in. They said, you don't have MS. But now it's taken 5 or 6 years. But the problem is I can't get back into the Alaska VA. They're at capacity. I was told when I called the Fairbanks VA, you're Eskimo, so you could go to ANMC. And I was like, to me, that was a step backwards. I've been trying through Veterans Choice since March to get a single appointment in Alaska. I finally have one for next week in Fairbanks. But that's since March 2nd. And there's no paperwork, there's no cars, there's no trail. We really need to go back to the old way. I haven't been seen in over 2 years for women's health, for example, you know, because we just can't get me in. So finally, the Veterans Health apparently got me into Interior Women's Health, where I've never been before. They don't have my 15 years of records of all the cancers and all the operations that I've had. And, you know, I've had 13 operations. They don't have a single copy of any of that, you know. So I have to start at ground zero with people who know nothing about me. Now, the VA, I was really upset when the guy in Fairbanks told me, well, you're Eskimo, you can go through the Alaska Native Medical Center. Well, I didn't do 8 years in the Navy to be told to go back to the Alaska Native Medical Center. And then my senator, Senator Sullivan, when I wrote to them for help, he said, apparently you're an Alabama resident coming to Alaska for the summer. I'm Eskimo. I was born here. The only time I really left was for my military service and then to go to Birmingham because they lead the nation in MS research. Hmm. Well, now I can't get back into Alaska. They're at capacity. Congressman apparently can't do anything. Help. You know, and I'm in Tote. You know, it's...
So you're in a remote community, too, yeah. Adding to the problem. And that, I think, is probably a common theme. Thank you so much for the call, Donna, and sorry for the frustrations that you've been having. I think that what Donna relays is kind of a common issue in Alaska, especially because there's so many communities, Tok is on the road system, but a lot of places in this state, as you well know, are not. And probably her problem encapsulates a lot of the issues that you're hearing. Carrie, in the service center, is this a common story, something like Donna has relayed here?
In regards to her health concerns, I would have to defer to Dr. Ballard. But for the service center, for veterans benefits, it is something. It's something that we deal with every day with the remoteness of Alaska. We try to do as much outreach as we can to reach that population of veterans to help them file claims and to help them understand their benefits for sure. We try to travel as much as we can. We partner with our healthcare with the VHA healthcare side as well, and try to provide our claims clinics like we're going to be doing this weekend, and promote our website and give out information wherever we can on filing benefits. It's a really an easy process. It can be cumbersome if you don't know how, but it's easy to file a claim.
Will there be any clinics such as the one you're describing anywhere near an area like Tok, or where would you tell Donna that she might be able to connect with?
It'll be Dr. Ballard.
So let's clarify. We're trying to increase our outreach significantly over what my predecessors have done in the state. So every quarter I go out and do town halls at our facilities. And unfortunately, we don't have our own clinic at Tok. We have clinics at the Matsu area, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Juneau. We heavily rely on our federal partners to help expand our coverage throughout the state. So yes, Donna is eligible for care through the tribal system. Whether or not she's native, if she's a veteran, we have a sharing agreement with all of the tribal health entities in the state to ensure that they get their care. But for someone specific in Tok, one event that we have coming up is this weekend on Saturday. We are trying to a new initiative. We're going to have a health fair, a claims clinic, and a motorcycle rally on Saturday.
Because why not?
The 29th, and it's going to be from 10 to 2 p.m. And we will have staff available to address issues much like what Donna's brought up. We will have benefits folks to address claims, to look at disability ratings and the like. We're going to have food. We're trying to increase our opportunities to interact with veterans, much like Donna, where it's difficult to get out into their regions. And so from TOC in particular, we haven't planned a trip out to TOC yet, but part of my travel schedule in regards to town halls is two times a quarter we go to a rural area where there isn't a clinic. So we've been to Haines, we've been to Bethel, we've been up to Barrow, we've been to Delta Junction, and we will certainly add TOC to the list because we know that there are veterans out there. But in the meantime, one of the things we're going to try to do is more of this. We're going to have a town radio, regular radio town hall where anyone in the state can call us into our Anchorage office. We'll have all of our staff available to be able to answer questions like this, because I've heard loud and clear for the past year that veterans want access to information. They want to be heard. And we only have 550 staff for a state that's twice the size of Texas. So it's very difficult for us to do that outreach. But I would encourage any veteran to look at our veteran service organizations in their local area, talk to some of the representatives there who can help out. But this is a common issue, particularly for folks who have an issue, whether it's benefits or health care. Getting access to us isn't always easy. So we're trying to do more to go out to them.
All right, thank you for that. We're going to stick with the phones for just a moment. Bob is in Thorn Bay. Hi, Bob.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say that I have no complaints with the VA. They've done me well over the years. The only thing I need to complain about is that idiot choice program. It's just one more layer of bureaucracy we have to deal with. It doesn't seem to serve any purpose other than to take more money. So with that, I'll leave you there. And good job, BA. Bye.
Thank you, Bob, for your succinct comments and right to the point. It sounds as if you've probably heard similar frustrations regarding the choice program in Alaska. Samuel Hudson.
I just want to go back for Donna. And just for all the veterans that may get that we're at capacity and they may be referred out in the community, our job is to take care of veterans, and that's what we're going to do, hold Holly. Dr. Ballard has empowered the staff. So let's say that Sam Hudson needs to get in. He wants, and we don't have a provider. It is not uncommon for them to say, okay, hey, you can go out in the community and be seen. That is not an uncommon thing, but one of the things that we're trying to, Dr. Ballard is doing, is we're trying to recapture those veterans. We just hired some more physicians there in Anchorage. We have some that's going to be there in Matsu, so we're trying to bring it back. But it is not uncommon for a veteran to be seen by the community, because just as you said, we rely on our federal partners, our tribal native sharing agreements to take care of. We have that old proverb where it takes a village to raise a child. We just kind of expanded where it takes the community to take care of that veteran. And so that's what we call upon.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to put this into perspective, we have 77 plus thousand veterans in the state. Roughly 36,000 are enrolled in the VA. Mm-hmm. So for those folks who aren't enrolled, we'd love to have you come by and see what your benefits are and those mm-hmm. sorts of things. But of those 36,000, about 23,000 are our unique users that mm-hmm. regularly use our system. Unfortunately, about 3,000 of those, we don't have the capacity to see, and we've been having them outsourced into the private sector through tribal clinics, civilian clinics, or whatnot, because we want to make sure that they get their primary care. Mm-hmm. But one of my big emphasis items within our staff is we are trying to hire more staff. As you can imagine, in a federal budget, we have a fixed budget, and so I'm trying to create money somewhere else in our system to buy more staff, because we're really budgeted for 550, but mm-hmm. we need 650 to 700. So at Sam's said is correct. We have hired literally 8 providers in the mm-hmm. last month for all of our facilities. And so one of the key ones I want to point out is there's been a lot of consternation in our Matsu clinic, and we just hired a physician for the first time in 5 years in mm-hmm. our Matsu clinic. So that's the sort of progress we're making, but it is very slow going. And I'm sorry to hear Donna's story, but we are trying to make an effort in regards to getting more access.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take more calls, more questions, as we discuss the future of improvements to the VA healthcare system in Alaska on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We have the head, the director of the Alaska VA healthcare system in the studio this morning. Dr. Timothy Ballard is with us. Carrie Epperson is also here. She is with the service center in Alaska, but will be moving to Seattle. I kind of had, I was a little ahead of the plan here in our introduction of you, Carrie. Sorry about that. And also Samuel Hudson, who is a public information officer with the Alaska VA in the studio with us as well. And Sam, you wanted to comment again on the care options that Donna was presented with, Donna and Tolk, who had called in earlier.
Well, I'll let Dr. Ballard talk about that one, but I want to kind of focus on the bad experience. We truly apologize, and she shouldn't be, and no veteran should be experiencing that. So that's the first. The second is we acknowledge that there have been some bad experiences for veterans, which is part of the reasons that veterans no longer feel comfortable at the VA or will come to us. And that's why we're having the event this Saturday, you know, the next generation VA, the new era begins today. We can't change the past as much as we want to, but we can effectively change the future. And Dr. Ballard has turned me loose, and that's why you see the culmination of this very unique, and it's the first time ever. So for all those listeners and those things, if you know a veteran that's not enrolled, tell them to come see us. If you know a veteran that had a bad experience, give us a chance. We're going to be there. Dr. Ballard's going to be there. I think the VBA has their associate director from region flying up. So this is important, not just to me, but to everyone.
And I'd like to back up a little bit to the distinction between the various parts of the VA.
Three different parts.
It's the largest healthcare provider in the country. The divisions that handle healthcare versus handling benefits and
cemetery affairs, which is handled by Ms. Virginia Walker.
Okay, so there's three areas within VA. Talk a little bit about what those distinctions are and the improvements that the VA is working on in that regard. Dr. Ballard?
Yeah, so contrary to when you were in the military, the TRICARE benefit through the military is a fixed benefit. Everybody got the same health care coverage, the same benefits that they received through the military. The VA is different. It's governed by Congress. All of the law, all the rules are established in law. The first thing that a veteran needs to do in order to establish their candidacy to be within the VA is they need to enroll. Mm-hmm. So they can take their DD-214 and they fill out a 1010 easy mm-hmm. form. They can come to our facility, they can come to veteran service organizations or the like, and they need to at least enroll. Usually the second step, in order to establish health care benefits, you need to establish what your disability ratings are, potential claims and the like. And so your DD-214 might have some of that information. You're going to need your medical records. If you don't have them, we oftentimes can get copies of them. But you want to provide a list of potential medical conditions that occurred, that are service-connected, that occurred during active duty, that might be related to disability claims. In the past, a veteran trying to establish a disability rating and claims could take years. Mm-hmm. We are progressively working in the VA to streamline that process. We have a very strong opinion that there is going to be a few veterans out there that will submit a claim to us at our claims clinic on Saturday. And for us, some of them, we may be able to get them an answer, a disposition, a rating within 48 hours. And so that's a significant impact. Once you have your disability rating and you've established yourself as enrolled and have a rating within the VA, that then dictates what healthcare benefits you have. It could be basic medical coverage. All your service-connected disabilities are always covered, but there may be other services depending on your rating, your income, and the like, which are very complicated and frustrating to myself as a veteran and all others. But all of it added up can then establish a varying degree of coverage that you might have through the VA. But the only way you'll know is to come in, talk to us, establish yourself, file claims and the like, and our staff are available to help assist with that. Carrie's team has been doing wonderful work to ensure that we get information to veterans. We go out on our town halls now with laptops so we can look up things in real time. But the key of all of this is that the veteran has to take the first step. It's not an automatic enrollment. It's not automatic. Nothing is automatic in the VA until they take the steps in order to establish themselves.
So they've got to take some responsibility for getting in that. And I want to talk a little bit about the past, as you were mentioning, that sometimes it took years for veterans to get their claims in and validated. But let's take another phone call quick. Kurt is in Anchorage. Hi, Kurt.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, a compliment, and then afterwards a couple of just comments. My VA care is wonderful. I have a wonderful doctor over there. A couple of friends of mine also have the same doctor, and she is very interested in us, concerned about us, and I really want to compliment her and the VA for having that. A couple of the problems that I've had in the past, one of them is authorization. In the past, when you wanted to see an outside doctor, and I have one that I see pretty much on a regular basis, and we have to go through the same rigmarole, the same bureaucracy every time you go to apply for this for a three-month period. If they'd make it for a whole year, it would cut down the paperwork and the amount of work required of an office staff. We used to walk in, see a guy named Jim. He had a single office, and you get your authorization in 5 minutes. Now you have an entire room full of people which can't get anything done in 3 weeks. Okay, basic comment there. That's, I guess, a bit of a complaint. That needs to be modernized and smoothened out a little bit. There's no sense having gone from one person doing everything to a whole room full of people that can't seem to get anything done. The other thing is, I'm glad that this choice system is over with. It was an absolute disaster. It's over with. In fact, I would not even go to the VA for wanting to see an outside doctor because of the choice system. Right now, everything is going very nicely, except trying to telephone in to talk to either your doctor's care nurse or any other thing at the VA. I now just call a regular number, punch zero so that I can get the operator, and she might be able to get me through to who I need to get through to. So hopefully your telephone system will be modernized a little bit and be made more efficient, smooth, and okay, less complicated and also less expensive to the VA and to us taxpayers. So enough of my comments here. Thank you very much for listening.
Appreciate it.
Thanks,
shipmate.
Thanks, Kurt. And I think we need to correct something about the choice program.
Yeah.
It's not gone.
Correct.
So Dr. Ballard, would you like to respond to Kurt and help clarify some of this?
So to clarify, that there is a planned next iteration of choice. Right now, the money has been exhausted from the choice fund, and so we're relying on our traditional non-VA care funds to coordinate care. Just to address some of Kurt's issues and concerns. Yes, we do have a wonderful staff. Our providers are wonderful. We generate 1,000 referrals a week. So Jim in the referral management office would be completely overwhelmed in paperwork within the span of a day by having a single person, just because the operations of our agency have grown so much. One of the things that we are working towards is going back to same-day authorization. So sometime this month, when we hire enough staff in our referral management office, and it's going to take, unfortunately, more, Kurt, we are going to have folks right in primary care. The moment a veteran walks out of the primary care clinic, they will go to this section, and if they have a referral, those folks will coordinate an authorization same day. This is part of us taking back the program and helping to coordinate it. That's something that's sorely needed. Right now, because because of the volume of 1,000 referrals we generate a week, our staff take about 2 to 3 weeks to get an authorization coordinated because they're all working with trying to call veterans, which is a very inefficient process, trying to call various clinics, which is a very inefficient process. And if we could put this all on the front end, as the veteran's walking out the door, if we could get them our authorization then and there, that's going to be a huge improvement in the process of how our veterans get their care. Unfortunately, I can't do much about the phone tree. We've tried to morph it as much as we could. This was a mandate from the VA to have a centralized call center, and many of you have called and talked to someone in Walla Walla, and the best that we could do to help make it unique in Alaska was to give our veterans sort of the backdoor numbers, i.e. calling zero to talk to the operator to get someone you talk to. But otherwise, I'm sort of forced to comply with VA policy and our regional policy to have a call center to address those things. And yet we get back to that. They're not in Alaska. They don't understand a lot of the issues associated with Alaska. So we've tried to be creative in ensuring that our veterans have access to certain clinical numbers, back doors, if you would, to help mitigate that issue. It's not perfect, but it's better than what many other facilities are dealing with.
Let's get Carrie in here for a moment. Carrie, you've been working on the benefits side of or the portion of the VA, but you've got a long tenure, 15 years, I think you said.
Yes, ma'am.
What have you seen in changes, and what are you hoping for that's on the horizon as far as service to veterans?
We've seen a lot of changes in VBA, veterans benefits, over the last several years. We've really streamlined the processing of veterans claims and benefits for veterans and their family members. We have gone paperless, which allows us to move through claims quicker and easier. We have gone into a national work queue. A lot of veterans hear that we are now working claims all over the United States. We are working in excess of 60 to 65% Alaska veterans claims. But I would like to say in response to that is if we have one of our other 56 regional offices that can work your claim more timely than we can, why would that be wrong? We're trying to work claims in 125 days, and the majority of claims are being worked in 125 days. We have access to benefits through e-benefits. The veterans can file their claims directly online and get to us. We have a new initiative right now, it's brand new, with our veteran service officers called Decision Ready Claims. These are claims that can be filed with your veteran service officer for a claim for an increase. You're already service connected for this disability. You can file the application and submit a disability benefits questionnaire, which is our version of an examination to evaluate this condition. And the goal is to have these claims completed within 30 days. So a lot of different processes have been implemented to allow us to streamline and shorten the claim process.
We're talking about improvements to the Veterans Administration healthcare system today, the VA system in Alaska. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And I want to go back to the phones for a moment, but first, I'd like to get a question in about the length of time that it takes to get claims resolved, and also what kind of documentation do people need? When you say to current service members and their families or parents about documenting service-related injuries and problems, if you could reach back in time 30 years for a veteran, an older veteran that now is coming forward saying, hey, I got this knee or this back thing.
Sure.
It happened in the service. I didn't tell anybody about it then because I just kept working. Or what kind of documentation do you need? What can he or she bring forward now that could help make that case?
Absolutely. Carrie. Great question. For a veteran who is filing an original claim, we need service treatment records. We need documentation of that injury in service. Does that mean that the veteran has to provide those records to us? If they have them, then absolutely, we want those records. If not, we have resources that will allow us to gather that evidence. It's as simple as filling out a VA form 526EZ documenting their conditions that they've disabilities that they've incurred in service. We'll go through their service treatment records. We need a DD-214 to verify service. Again, these are documents that if the veteran does not have, we can get them for them. Private medical records can establish continuity if a veteran injured themselves in service and was never seen but has private treatment records that show continued treatment. We would like those records as well to show that. Lay statements are very important. We have changed a lot over the years on how we're doing our service-connected disabilities. You go back to your Vietnam veteran who was in the field and was not seen for every little bump and bruise or injury, you know, and they just didn't have that resource available to them. We can take lay statements where we can consider service connection based on their military occupation. Exposure to acoustic trauma for hearing loss is very prevalent. And so we can, if we don't have evidence in service, we can consider exposure based on their military occupation. Again, injuries such as if you had a parachuter that did not get seen because they didn't want to be removed from their parachute status, jump status. Veterans all the time have received injuries that they didn't have documented. And having a lay statement to tell us that what their injury was and that they still have that problem is very important. And they can provide statements from their family members as well.
I wondered about that. And what about statements from other members of the service that they served with that may have witnessed what happened?
Absolutely, because in some cases, we may not have all the records or any records. And lay statements can be very valuable in establishing service connection.
So, Lori, just real quickly, what Carrie gave you was a broad overview. And what we're going to be putting on our Facebook is she's given me just some tidbits, things of veterans to bring for Saturday. So that way, if they're hoping to get some things done, their expectations, we'll have those on our Facebook page. And that's Alaska VA Healthcare Facebook page. They'll be able to see, have down those things, some of those things that Carrie just said.
All right. And we'll link to that on our website, alaskapublic.org, so that people can follow those to Facebook. Dr. Ballard?
One other thing to point out also is that sometimes these claims can take several weeks or months to gather the information and provide a disposition of them. But we want you to come in.
Yes.
Any veteran out there, we want you to come in because the date you establish your claim is actually the date then that goes back for all benefits. And so even if it does take 6 months to a year to finalize a claim and get a disposition associated with it, there's a form that can be filled out that will allow that benefit to go back to the date that they originally started the claim. So if anybody's hesitant because they don't think they have the information to do what Carrie's talking about, please come in. Let our staff work with you or go to your veteran service organizations because we want to get the opportunity for folks to have that established.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Mike is in Anchorage. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I'm a disabled vet. I've been using the VA for over 10 years. I'm an ex-health insurance agent. The VA is really, really great. I have nothing but praise about it. If I was have to rely on civilian health insurance, it'd be a lot worse. It'd be paying a lot more. It would have worse service. And the only reason there's any delay right now is because of the illegal war we fought in Iraq. There's so many vets coming back with disabilities. It's amazing that the VA has been able to absorb it relatively easily. So, again, I have nothing but praise about the VA, and actually it should be available to all the public. This type of service, at least single payer, Medicaid, Medicare for all. That's my comment.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike, for calling in. Dr. Ballard, would you say that Alaska has, Mike was just talking about resources and absorbing. Does Alaska have sufficient resources for connecting veterans with mental health and substance abuse care?
Mm. Wow. Really broad question there. As you know, you likely know, the resources within the state of Alaska for comprehensive mental health coverage aren't adequate. We don't have enough inpatient beds for residential treatment, for acute residential treatment, for long-term residential treatment. However, we do have a program that does allow veterans to get that care. We have a domiciliary that has 50 beds in downtown Anchorage, and we do provide that. But my answer would be we don't. I don't know that there are enough mental health providers in the country to deal with all the mental health needs across the country. And so I would encourage people to do their homework. If you have kids, have them go into mental health, because it's going to be a growing business in the long run. But the point of all this is that we really need to partner with our communities to ensure that we can provide all the coverage for the veterans need. And so for the services we don't have, we do partner with our federal partners. We do partner with our civilian partners. And again, we want to maintain great relationships with those so that our veterans in need do get the care that they want. I do want to point out something you brought up in one of Dr. Shulkin's initiatives is suicidality. Every day across the country, 20 veterans commit suicide. Mm. And it's a very sad story. And part of the information that needs to be out there that I think is important is 14 of those 20 people every day that commit suicide, the veterans, are not in our system. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any way of providing the mental health services for them unless they identify themselves or if the community can identify them. And so I would ask anybody out there who knows a veteran in crisis, please let us know so that we can provide that support. We'll need to get them signed up if they're not enrolled, but we can do that in an expeditious manner. Mm-hmm. But it is a travesty in this country that every day 14 of 20 veterans who commit suicide aren't in our system for us to provide their care. And another interesting statistic is that 60% of those veterans who commit suicide are over 50. And so it's frequently a different demographic. We oftentimes see suicide in our younger population, and in our veterans, it's usually the older folks, oftentimes with significant health issues, maybe no longer have family in the area. And so it's easy for them to turn to that sort of option. And again, until we partner in a community and have outreach opportunities like we're having this weekend, we don't have an idea of who they are. Mm-hmm. So I'm asking for the folks out there who know veterans in crisis, please let us know so that we can provide that information. There's a 1-800 hotline number across the country. We have crisis lines associated with veterans in crisis, but we need to know who they are to help them out.
And we're going to have somebody from eligibility on hand to enroll them that day to get them enrolled to the VA.
Let's take another call. Don is in Anchorage. Hi, Don.
Hi, kudos. You guys are doing a great job. Yeah, I'm a vet, Vietnam era, and all I can say is you're on the right course because you're staying in there and you're trying. The first thing that popped into my head with the gal, Donna from Tok, was records. Some years ago when I first started going heavy to the VA up here, I had trouble with the records. They had me send down to St. Louis to get a bunch of them. And I think you alluded to it earlier, and that is if you got anything laying around that you think the VA may not have a copy of, get it over to them. Mm-hmm. They can't do much if you don't, present them with enough information for them to make a good choice and good decision. But likewise, on the end, when it comes to paying the bills and stuff, they are getting better. I was in there the other day to double-check some appointments, and I asked the guy what he was up to, and he says he's just working on a new program he got putting in the computer and trying to get more things better coordinated. But I think you got a real good point there as far as noting that most of the guys that do commit suicide that are vets are not hooked into the VA. And to them, I say, don't give up on your country. Turn around, give them a good, honest, sincere try.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, thank you, Don,
thank you
for the call. And again, as Don just kind of reaffirmed, that it does take some personal responsibility to get that all those copies of paperwork and things in, so that people can have success with those claims. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we'll take more calls and questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
A Veterans Town Hall featuring Dr. Timothy Ballard will take place on August 1st from 5 to 6:30 p.m. in the Mendenhall Valley Public Library in Juneau. The VA welcomes frank and open discussions of veterans' concerns in all program areas. Time will be made available for individuals to address their concerns in one-on-one sessions. For more information, email samuel.hudson@va.gov. This message sponsored by the VA.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing improving the VA healthcare system in the state and also looking at some of the national issues. There's been several emails that have come in that that are looking for information beyond just a comment on the program. So I'll be passing those along and
Thank you.
That you guys can answer these folks. I just wanted to let them know that those emails will go on to the people that we have here in the room today. And also, here's a question from Charlie, who says, listening to the show, wondering if the VA needs and uses volunteers. Can you elaborate either way? Does the VA need
volunteers? That's all you.
Volunteers, one of the backbones of the VA. Absolutely. We definitely encourage and welcome volunteers. There's so much money that we save by having volunteers doing things from paperwork, from willing the veterans, and just that one-on-one interactions. But if you're interested in being a volunteer, all you have to do is contact my office, which I'll provide the number, 257-5490. We have a volunteer service chief, Miss Jenny Fox. There's a small application, some tests, but we use volunteers all the way from Anchorage to Fairbanks to Craig to TVRs to Juneau. We'll find a niche if they're willing.
All right. That sounds like a good invitation. And speaking of Craig, we have Matt on the line from Craig. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a veteran and a physician and really enjoying the program, especially what Carrie was saying about guys making claims without really clear history in their service records. I do help a contractor who does these evaluations, and I want you to know that people come from all over the state, and the VA takes care of their expenses. Things go smoothly. It's really, really good. I won't reiterate what you said about, you know, people situations where they feel like their claim might not be good because they have no records or that kind of thing. I think she's covered it really well. The only one thing I wanted to confirm that we regularly say is that, and I've seen plenty of guys who get this, is that they have a service-connected problem wherever, and then 10 years later, they get a complication and or a progression of that problem. That also can become service-connected. You guys could probably give a better example than I could, but I don't want to take too much time.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Matt, for the call. Carrie, do you want to respond quickly? And I'd like to get a couple more calls in if we can.
Absolutely. What Matt was alluding to are secondary service connection conditions. If you are service connected for a disability and it starts to create a new disability, you can file a claim for that secondary disability. An example may be if you're service connected for your left knee and you have altered gait that is maybe causing problems with a non-service connected right knee or your back. I'm not a doctor, so I don't understand the mechanics of the body, but these are disabilities that can cause other disabilities. You can file a claim for a secondary. At any time, you can file a claim for an increase. If your condition has worsened, you can file that. And at any time, you can file a new claim. There is no limit to when a veteran can file a claim. They can file an original claim 10 years after they get out of service.
All right. Well, thank you for that clarification. Let's go to Crystal in Anchorage. Hi, Crystal.
Hi.
Can you quickly tell us if you have a question?
No, I don't have a question. I just want to let you know that when I was in the military, I served for 20 years. I am retired. And I had heart problems throughout. I wore heart monitors on several different occasions. They could never really pinpoint anything. But I have had two heart attacks since I have been retired, And in 2008, they completely lost the paperwork that I had filed. And then I kept being diligent about the whole thing. And finally, they gave me they sent me for a comp and pen examination. And the doctor was, I knew when I was talking to him that I wasn't, that nothing was going to happen with that, because he was very nonchalant about the entire thing. And one of his questions was, are you one of those women who had problems while you were in the military? And I said, well, show me a woman who doesn't have problems in the military. Show me a man. And he said, well, I'm going to take all of this into consideration. I think this is, you know, this examination is complete. And, of course, my claim was denied. Hmm. And so it's just a matter of not, I don't know what the problem is, other than the fact that I know women are fighting harder for compensation than the men are having to.
Well, Crystal, we only have a couple minutes left, and I appreciate your frustration and concerns here, and I want to give our experts a chance to not only weigh in, but also in the final moment, make sure that people understand that there is a gathering tonight and this weekend, and mm-hmm. give us those details.
Absolutely. Crystal, I'm really, I want to apologize for the examination experience you had. We do use a variety of contract examiners and local examiners and VA examiners, and not every veteran's experience is the same. I would encourage you to file your claim again. It's possible that we can still get this decision mm-hmm. Made for you, that depending on what evidence we have. If you're local, please come see us this weekend.
Yeah.
We're going to be at the VA clinic. We're having a big event from 10 to 2 o'clock. I'm going to have folks on staff that you can speak to directly, and let's figure out what kind of evidence we need or what may have been overlooked in your case.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Dr. Ballard, I want to give you the final word here. There's the gathering tonight, and that's in Wasilla, is that right?
That's correct. It's at the Menard Center in Wasilla. And so tonight at 6 o'clock until 7:30, we have a town hall. I'll bring staff to answer virtually any question, whether it's benefits, whether it's referral questions, whether it's choice, whether it's just health care questions in general. I've had people come up and ask my opinion as a physician on things. At the end of it, if there's anyone who wants mm-hmm. a one-on-one interaction with myself because they don't feel comfortable speaking publicly about their situation, we'll stand by to answer those questions. The goal is to have everybody get an opportunity to be heard, to get an answer, or at least get a point of contact so that we can give them more information. And I do this, like I said, every quarter at Wasilla, but every quarter at every facility in our organization, plus a couple rural sites every quarter. So coming up, it's going to be Kotzebue and Ketchikan. And it's a great opportunity.
All right. Well, thank you so much. There will be links on our website, alaskapublic.org, to more information about the upcoming clinics and numbers that you can call. Thank you to Dr. Timothy Ballard, the director of the AK of Alaska VA Healthcare System. Carrie Epperson and Samuel Hudson were also on board today to answer questions. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to young people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in all the training programs, from office administration to water and wastewater treatment. Tweet hashtag CareersBeginHere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.